technique, a direct heating, and the amalgam powder will disengage itself. The mercury will actually be able to evaporate out and will leave a gold sheen on something. And you say, yes, you can make gold, you see. Well, but can you find the elixir of life? It's one thing to make gold. So you can see that the Taoists strung people out of necessity to protect themselves, and also out of teaching the sensitivity to transformation that the students were actually being taught about transformation. But the inner core of understanding would not be visible unless the student could come to that quintessential practice of Wu Wei. And so eventually, after about 700 or 800 years from the fall of the Han Dynasty through the end of the Tang into the Sung, then the practice changed. And what became of interest was the practice of Wu Wei. And this, of course, is the heyday of what they used to call Chan Buddhism, Zen Buddhism, or this sort of a practice. It's actually Taoist. It's a Taoist discipline. And it's the quintessence of those that five-phase energy change. In Chuangzi, we find here, Chuangzi is about 300 years after Laozi. We find in chapter 7, Chuangzi is talking about Laozi. And here's how he talks about him. That a famous philosopher named Yang Zhuju went to see Laozi and said, "Here is a man swift as an echo, strong as a beam, with a wonderfully clear understanding of the principles of things, studying the way, the Tao, without ever letting up. A man like this could compare with an enlightened king, couldn't he?" Lao Tzu said, "In comparison to the sage, a man like this is a drudgling slave, a craftsman bound to his calling, wearing out his body and grieving his mind. They say it is the beautiful markings of the tiger and the leopard that call out the hunter, the nimbleness of the monkey and the ability of the dog to catch rats that make them end up chained. A man like this, how could he compare to an enlightened sage?" Yang Zhuju, much taken aback, said, "May I venture to ask about the government of an enlightened king?" Lao Tzu said, "The government of an enlightened king, his achievements blanket the world, but appear not to be his own doing. His transforming influence touches the 10,000 things, but the people do not depend on him. With him there is no promotion or praise. He lets everything find its own enjoyment. He takes a stand on what cannot be fathomed, and wanders where there is nothing at all." Later on, these will become cute apocryphal stories to people who think that this is only literature or only some kind of metaphor, not understanding that Zhuangzi is speaking as a Shengjian, speaking very, very directly. And in fact, Zhuangzi will change the term from Shengjian, holy man, and he will start to use the term Chenjian, which means realized man, Chenjian. So that one will later on be able to tell in a Taoist training, if you have a Taoist training, if it is the practice that you have in your own self, it will be a Shengjian that you will understand. But if your practice comes through literature, and you can learn through literature, then you will understand it as a Chenjian. And you will relate more to Chuangzi. But if you're out on the road of life, free and easy, then Lao Tzu is the person to take along. But if you're living in town and tacking down a job and you've got friends and family and things, Chuang-Tzu is better. If you're out with the clouds, Lao-Tzu. If you're in the garden, Chuang-Tzu. It's like that. Both work equally well. So we have a basic kind of acquaintance now with the Chinese sensibility, with the Taoist sensibility. And you can see that there's a quality here that centers upon the quintessential place that man occupies. So that the Chinese statement will be that man bridges heaven and earth. Give Elizabeth a little shake there. Man bridges heaven and earth. And that the bridging that man does is not so much that he makes something happen. This would be like the old Shan idea that man conveys something from heaven to earth. He tunes into the ancestors through ritual and gets the scoop on what they're going to tell him so he can manipulate down here. Or that he bridges because he's got something going down here and he's going to send a little bit up there. We're going to burn some paper money for them. Now, if they were really there, are they going to be satisfied with paper money? They want the real thing, right? If they're really there. Burn all you have, man. Now we're going to burn you. But man is not a bridge like this. He's not a bridge of conveying something from earth to heaven. They don't need anything here. And he's not a bridge of conveying something from heaven to earth. This is a Confucian understanding. The Confucian personality is completely delineated and exfoliated on this structure of understanding man as a bridge between heaven and earth, of conveying something from each to each. But the Taoist understanding that the bridge is of doing nothing, wu wei, because heaven and earth are a unity that nobody can make into a duality in the Tao. How are you going to do it? It's only your arrogance and your ignorance that's making it seem like multiplicity. And if you let that go, there's no problem. This is contemporary talk, but it's Taoist. So that the bridging is a quality which separates the Confucianists and the Taoists immediately. And you can tell a Taoist from a Confucianist just almost in a jillionth of a second. I've met about 3 Taoists, and I've met maybe about 1,000, 1,500 Confucianists. I'm speaking about teachers. What tries to understand what goes from earth to heaven and from heaven to earth is the mind. It's the mind then. So man is understood in a Confucian way as his mentality. And in fact, the great Neo-Confucian confab made in the Sung Dynasty under Zhu Xi and then in the Ming Dynasty made sophisticated by Wang Yang Ming, and we'll get to all these, that polished Neo-Confucianism is actually a mental discipline which enables someone to function with great efficiency in the realm of the 10,000 things. And in no way can someone like that ever practice Wu Wei. No way whatsoever. And so one of the phrases that will come in later on in Sung times and in Mongol times, the Yuan dynasty, and because it came in the late Sung and in the Yuan dynasty, it passes over into Japan, and the term will be no mind. No mind, that the practice is no mind. And that will be a way of stating from the standpoint, don't let the mind play with you and involve you in all of this rigmarole. But that will be a late development. The primordial understanding of that will always be the Taoist Wu Wei. so that Tao returns back to unity through man's Wu Wei. And this is the essential Taoist pattern. The four elements, then, fire and water, metal and wood, relate around as a dynamic matrix, relate around Earth. And you notice here that air is not one of the elements. Air is not one of the elements in China. This spatiality is a quality that is there in the consciousness that is a part of the Earth, that part of the Earth which is space, air, consciousness, is man. He is that part of the Earth. And that quality of man that is like that is his shen, is his shen. And his shen is what we would call his spirit. And the shen is his bright celestial, as opposed to heaven, his bright celestial nature. And that bright celestial nature, when it comes into an earthly experience, has, because of the polarities of the earthly realm, has a complement that comes in, which we would understand as a shadow. It's not something else, but it's the shadow. And the shadow of the shen, the shadow of the spirit, is what the Chinese would call the pull, the pull. And this shen, when it comes into the person in the earthly plane, then becomes the hun. And the hun and the pole are the celestial and the shadow spirit that come together and are held together by the ji, by the dynamic of that person's being, of that person's life, that ji. And at death, where that ji stops, where it's no longer going, no longer functioning, the hun and the po separate immediately. And the hun, if it hasn't been dabbled with the 10,000 things too much, goes back and becomes a shen. And the po goes back and becomes what we would understand as a demon, can we say that? Becomes an earth shadow spirit. A gui, as the Chinese would call it, a gui. So that in Taoism, there's always paying attention to the fact that not everyone is a shen jin. Not everyone is purified so that he becomes a shen, that the hun becomes a shen, and the po just goes back into the earth and is just there as a part of it. That most people, as a matter of fact, have clouded themselves up to such an extent by getting electrocuted, by playing with the 10,000 things, that when they die at the moment of death, that the po is much, much more sizable in effect. And one needs then to placate the spirits of the dead because of this reason. And so the development in Taoism, as we'll see, with pharmacology, with ritual, with alchemy, with geomancy, architecture, mystical architecture, all of these disciplines will largely be centered around this issue of how do you keep grounded all of these gui, all of these demonic earth shadow spirits of people who have not lived purified lives. And that eventually it will occur to them that because so many human beings have lived these corrupt lives for so long, that the earth itself has become corrupt. Earth itself has become corrupt. And so Taoism will have a great challenge in this, in Ming times, as we'll see, in trying to deal with this. Well, we've got a basic background. Needham tells us that there are only five histories of China, that short histories that are any good. And I have all of them here in this stack. C.P. Fitzgerald's China, A Cultural History, René Grousset's History of China, The History of China by Eberhard, Carrington Goodrich, A Short History of the Chinese People, and Richard Wilhelm's A Short History of Chinese Civilization. And these are the five that Needham singles out. He also says in his book here that one of the difficulties in writing this book and bringing all this information to the whole is that we have a great difficulty in our own comportment of understanding that the Chinese discoveries, their achievements, are legitimate. Their achievements in science, their achievements in their civilization. And one of the aspects that stands in our way is misunderstanding Taoism, because there is a primordial antipathy to the Western person, the way the Western psyche has been constellated in our own tradition, that we tend not to recognize this Wu Wei as anything at all that is not consequential, that the Tao must be, in fact, a principle, like a Li. It must be a way. And that the yin and the yang must be a polarity. It must refer to a psychic state. And all of this is a prejudice, a cultural prejudice on our part, which is rooted so deep in our personalities that we tend to misunderstand habitually and unconsciously. So what I'm going to try to present here, week after week, is a way of acclimating us so that we begin to see in Chinese way. And it'll take maybe a month or two, but eventually you'll start to get the flavor of it. And you'll start to hear in the materials that are brought up. We'll have a lot of slides. I have a lot of pictorial elements in this. And you'll start to pick up the flavor. And when you do, that Chinese sophisticated flavor becomes like a, I think the classical Buddhist term was a perfuming. A perfuming. And you begin to notice that it's not offensive at all to be Chinese for a moment. That's very easy, very humane. And that you don't just do it when you sit down with a bowl of rice and chopsticks, but in almost any condition. And it's this contact of humaneness on a cosmic level that we need. We need that depth of contact. What was the old American Indian prayer? Let me not criticize another man until I've walked a mile in his moccasins. We have to be able to walk a mile in the Chinese way at least once in our lives. And we're going to have to be able to teach this to about 2 billion people in the next generation, or we're going to have an East-West tension that is real. So we're pioneering here, and I thank you for coming, because otherwise I wouldn't do it.